Tomorrow, Friday, we have a slight chance of a thunderstorm, high around 87. And finally, the summer season is here. We just skipped into summer right away. Spring is nowhere to be seen now. Friday night, we're going to have some thunderstorms.
USA Radio News.
Today, as President Donald Trump kicked off a cabinet meeting, he took a few questions from reporters. One of the reporters asked what would happen if Iran started up their nuclear program.
Iran will find out. They're going to find out. I don't think they should do that. I would advise Iran not to start their nuclear program. I would advise them very strongly. If they do, there will be very severe consequence. Okay?
Three members of the Banditos Motorcycle Club were indicted today on murder charges stemming from a 2015 shooting that involved police and members of another biker club outside a restaurant in Waco, Texas. Police arrested nearly 200 bikers following the shooting, which left 9 dead and 20 injured. Investigators say the incident was sparked by rivalries of the two biker clubs. Please remember, you can check us out online at usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax
afternoon.
Mediation
Welcome
Services.
To our show. Knock,
if your
knock,
business
who's there?
Owes $20,000 or more in taxes,
host.
We can help
and,
you today.
And this is
right
a show about
now.
Real estate.
Listen,
everything you always
with
wanted
the IRS
to know,
is
but
no
I was afraid
it's an
to
intimidating
ask.
And extremely
I have some exciting,
stressful process.
Guests
and you
on the
don't
show
want
today.
To go it alone. Our attorneys know
couple
every
of my
law,
real estate
every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax
process as well.
If you owe more than $20,000,
our
you
phone number
at the
here
top
is,
of their hit
actually,
list.
My cell
so don't take your tax debt lightly because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank account,
or you
your
can
home,
call
and
we can
even shut
try
down
to
your
air.
Business. Call our tax experts today at
1-800-204-2650
and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-204-2650. Again, 800-204-2650.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. Very excited for this week's episode. We have Patrick Dowd returning on the show, a.k.a. Sign Guy, for those Islanders fans listening. He is a wonderful guest to listen to. We're going to go over the history of the New York Islanders, so stay tuned to that. Before, though, we are going to do the weather. It is mostly clear today. It is going to get pretty cold, 50 degrees. We've been spoiled with 80-degree weather the last 2 weeks, but it's going to get a little into that springtime nights. It's going to get 50 degrees tonight, and then this weekend will be sunny with a high of 73 all weekend. We'll have sunny days, and it should be a nice weekend. So that is your weather. We will be right back with Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy, for today's episode.
All you veterans, listen up. The sponsors of the May 19th Patriotic Concert being held at 2 p.m. at North Hunterdon High School are giving away free tickets to veterans and their families as a thank you for your service. Concert includes special guest Joe Piscopo and over 100 performers and musicians, including a 17-piece big band, a 32-piece string orchestra, Broadway show Trans-Siberian Orchestra singer, an operatic angel, a rising child star, a choral group, and of course the award-winning Hunterdon Harmonizers. You can call the show's producer, Kevin Gray, at 908-419-9878 for ticket info. Call right now because tickets are limited. The number again is 908-419-9878. That's 908-419-9878. It's going to be a great show, so veterans, get your tickets now.
So if you placed a $1,000 bet on the expansion Vegas Golden Knights, when they were listed at 500-1 odds to win the Stanley Cup before the season, you would be walking away with $500,000 if the Vegas Golden Knights were to win the Stanley Cup in June. Right now, the Knights are one of four teams that are going to be playing in the conference finals. They're in the Western Conference Finals. Their Cinderella run is continuing, and it has been a fantastic story. They really are, and we've been talking about them since January 17th when this show started. Every single week, it seems like, we're talking about the Golden Knights because they are that special. They are a team that takes over the headlines. They're a must-watch, and this is good for the sport of hockey. And the bettors, Vegas is a betting city, as we all know. The people who bet on them are going to be rich because they were supposed to be a terrible, and I mean terrible, hockey team. And they are one of the best, most complete teams with the best goaltender in hockey, arguably, so far. A solid defense, really complete, and just a really, really good forward group that can score, play defense, and check. They roll out four lines. I say it every week. This team is for real, and they're going to be playing the Winnipeg Jets or Nashville Predators in the Western Conference Finals. And I can't believe I'm saying that, but I'm really excited. But now that they're in the conference finals, there's a lot of negativity circulating around the Knights. Their magical run is something we've never seen. It's like the miracle on ice. It's one of the best stories hockey's ever known. If they win the Stanley Cup, it could take over, you know, USA beating the Soviet Union, miracle on ice. It's that good. But there's a lot of people who are dubious of what the Knights have done. And Debbie Koch on The Ringer suggested that, is this a hot take? Maybe it is. I don't know. But she said the Golden Knights are not the same underdog expansion surprise story because the league loaded them with more talent than any expansion team in any league ever. And in fact, we should hate them for that because they have an unfair advantage. So that's a bold quote. That is something that is bold, but it's something that everyone's saying. You don't hear this just from one person. Every single person around hockey seemingly is doubting the Knights. And I have tried not to because I think they are just watching them, I've watched a lot of their games. They're one of the best teams I've ever seen. They really are. They are so good. But there's a lot of people who don't buy what they're doing, and that's because the expansion draft was, quote, rigged, according to the haters, as they'll say. Because the expansion draft, opposing teams had the option of protecting 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goaltender, or 1 goaltender and 8 skaters, regardless of position. So the threshold from 2000, when the Minnesota Wild and Columbus Blue Jackets entered the league, that was lowered significantly because the NHL wanted the Vegas Golden Knights to be competitive. And even though Vegas didn't know they'd be competitive, even though all journalists, all people around the league, fans didn't know they'd be competitive, the NHL had an inkling that this draft would really stack Vegas with talent. And back in 2000, teams could protect 9 forwards, 5 defensemen, and 1 goalie. That is a lot of players. That's the majority of your team. That means only fourth liners and, you know, bottom pairing defensemen are getting claimed. That's not a good team. The Vegas Golden Knights, they didn't just take the best players possible. They made trades to get the best players possible where they also acquired future assets. The new format led to Vegas getting a fantastic team that was just so complete. This is a team of misfits. The Golden Misfits is their nickname. And this is because teams literally offered first-round picks to take players that were really good hockey players. The Columbus Blue Jackets gave up a first- and second-round pick to the Golden Knights so they would select William Karlsson, who is a 40-goal scorer. That is, like, unfathomable. William Karlsson is one of the best players in hockey this year, and he was traded with a first and a second and David Clarkson's contract, which was also a major component of the deal. But Columbus was willing to, you know, part ways with him. And now Vegas is right near the Stanley Cup. They're so close. They have won more playoff series over the last 10 seasons than 43% of the NHL. They have won 2 playoff series. There are 13 teams that have only won 1 or less. They are rolling, and if they're going to be the most successful expansion team, not just in hockey, but in all of sports. And this might be dreaming. It's not really that crazy of a thought, but Vegas is a favorite to win the Stanley Cup right now. And if they do, they would have more Stanley Cups than 12 other NHL teams and be tied with 5 others. They would automatically be one of the top half franchises in the NHL in one season. They would have history. They would be remembered forever. And the Vegas Golden Knights are looking to do something no one has ever done before. So I wish them luck. I really hope they go far and make the Stanley Cup, because Las Vegas is the best crowd I've ever seen. It is fantastic how great this crowd is. And they're better than Nashville. They're better than Winnipeg. That's a bold take, but I think they are. I think they're the best crowd in hockey. They really, really deserve this. And I don't care if it makes the NHL look bad that an expansion team is coming in and dominating all these teams that have been in existence for 100 years. The NHL is now more competitive. It inspires other teams to be better. Vegas will now always be a hockey town, literally forever, because of this. Fans will be drawn to this team. Players will want to come to Vegas. John Tavares is a free agent. John Tavares might be going to the Vegas Golden Knights. Erik Karlsson was almost headed to the Vegas Golden Knights. They're already going after star players to complete an already stacked roster. And then Seattle, an expansion team that will most likely be coming over in two seasons, they're going to have a lot of expectations. But this isn't bad. This isn't pressure. This is just saying, look at what they did. You can do it. Go ahead and good luck. So hopefully Seattle can do it, because this has just been one of the best storylines of all time. So that's the Vegas Golden Knights. Really excited for them. And another team with a lot of momentum and a really happy fan base right now is the Washington Capitals. They advanced to the conference finals for the first time in 20 years. And this year was different. It is the Caps year. Fans have been saying all season, it's our year, it's our year. And at first it seemed ridiculous. Their team was less prepared. They had younger talent. They didn't have the stars that they had before. No big trade to acquire a Kevin Shattenkirk or another star player. They stuck with their homegrown guys. And other Capitals teams in the series with the Penguins, they would have lost in a game two, for example, after dominating the Penguins in game one. They would have lost in game six in overtime. They would have blown that game, because that's what the Capitals did. That is what they were notorious for, never being able to finish. So the Washington Capitals went from a team that was a failure to now, finally, the demons are off their shoulders. They didn't have to go home for a game seven against Pittsburgh. That was huge, because I'm telling you, they would not have won that game. Pittsburgh's just too good. They took advantage of a mistake by Sidney Crosby in overtime. Sidney Crosby turned the puck over. Of getting Kuznetsov made him pay. That was important, because if that shot doesn't go in and Pittsburgh scores, Pittsburgh's winning that game. 80% chance they're winning game seven, because that's what Pittsburgh does. They took advantage of a weakness. And this year, I touched on it before, no trade deadline addition. No big signing this offseason. Devontae Smith-Pelly was the big signing. There was just no pressure on this team. I mean, there was pressure, but there wasn't like media everywhere really breathing down their shoulders. It was like, oh, if they win, they win. They were the underdogs. For the first time ever, they were the underdogs. And even though they were the one seed, even though Pittsburgh was not as good probably, although I'd argue that, but standings-wise, they weren't as good. You see a team that just thrived off this. They thrived off being the underdog. Jacob Vrana, Chandler Stephenson, Devontae Smith-Pelly, Alex Chisholm, Travis Boyd, Nathan Walker, Michael Kempe, and Christian Jews all played for the Capitals in Game 6. Not one of those players played for the team last year. And the casual fan, if you're listening and you're out there, just the casual Islanders fan or just a casual person, I'm betting you've never heard of any of those players, because they are just not really good players. And there's a solid, you could fit those players on two hands. There's seven players there. There's more. And they really controlled the play when they were on the ice. They contributed to a series win. Last year, the team had a stacked roster, but they couldn't live up to expectations. This year, the team was a little worse, but the pressure was off, and they won when they had to. So the Washington Capitals and Vegas Golden Knights, congratulations to you guys. Two great hockey teams. They could be meeting in the Stanley Cup Finals in one of the most improbable matchups ever. But for now, it's the conference finals. Nashville and Winnipeg will determine that tomorrow night. We'll have our conference finals, and we'll definitely be talking about that more next week on the show. So we'll be right back with Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy, on Destination Hockey. Please stick with us.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community.
All you veterans, listen up. The sponsors of the May 19th Patriotic Concert being held at 2 p.m. at North Hunterdon High School are giving away free tickets to veterans and their families as a thank you for your service. Concert includes special guest Joe Piscopo and over 100 performers and musicians, including a 17-piece big band, a 32-piece string orchestra, Broadway show Trans-Siberian Orchestra singer, an operatic angel, a rising child star, a choral group, and of course the award-winning Hunterdon Harmonizers. You can call the show's producer Kevin Gray at 908-419-9878 for ticket info. Call right now because tickets are limited. The number again is 908-419-9878. That's 908-419-9878. It's going to be a great show, so veterans, get your tickets now.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. We are here with Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy, one of my favorite people ever to speak to, nicest guy, most positive guy in the world. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, absolutely, David. Thank you.
Of course. So last time we did more of an interview format, but this time I kind of want to focus on the history of the New York Islanders because things are going pretty poorly right now in the Islanders' land, a lot of organizational issues. But if you look back to the history, it's important to remember because the Islanders have one of the greatest histories of all time. So it all started, William Shea, who had helped bring Major League Baseball's New York Mets to the area, was enlisted to bring an NHL team to Long Island. And this was a tough task because the NHL didn't have that many teams back in the day, and Long Island wasn't exactly the biggest market. They didn't want a minor league team. The Raiders were originally going to be coming to the city, which the government didn't really want. So the Islanders were the team that was brought over. How was the initial stage, the politics exactly of it, of the Islanders coming over to Long Island, and how difficult was it for the team to finally have a home?
Well, a couple of things to hit on. The World Hockey Association was the opposing league that they were hoping to bring as a competitor to the NHL. At that time, it was a thought that they could bring enough talented teams to compete with the league, and obviously, as we found out in time, it just didn't work out for them. But yeah, bringing a team into a franchise back in those days with other teams that and other leagues that wanted to help out to, you know, form kind of their own identity was a challenge. And honestly, going back in the 70s, again, like you said, William Shea was very instrumental in getting this team in here. And Ray Bowe, who was the owner of the Islanders at the time and also of the New York Nets, was a big player too, because here was an owner who was faced with some difficult decisions to figure out what was best overall for his plan. And, you know, it kind of worked out for them because there was a little bit of a, you know, how would I say it best, a struggle to decide what would be the best direction for them to take. Would Roy Bowe take an AHL team and try to, you know, bring them to Coliseum, or the NHL would be a best solution for them, and it turned out that that was. But moving forward, that was a good decision because the Islanders were granted the expansion, and they were awarded the team as the Islanders in 72 back with the Atlanta Flames.
Yeah, and Bo was a clothing manufacturer. There was a lot of, not mistrust, but people were nervous. But this all started with the naming. They wanted them to be named the Long Island Ducks, and the Long Island Ducks now are a minor league baseball team. So there was a lot of struggle, but the Islanders' ownership at the time really did a good job at building the foundation of this team that went on to do so well. And that really started with Bill Torrey. And Bill Torrey, unfortunately, recently passed away. I would like to, you know, give my condolences to his family. Huge loss in the hockey world. And it's really a shame that someone so loved is gone. But Bill Torrey, unbelievable general manager. He was the executive vice president of the California Seals, and he was the first general manager of the Islanders. So how did he build this team from the ground up?
Oh, well, so, for instance, as you said, you know, he was with the California Golden Seals and a big role there. When he came over to the Islanders, you know, Bill Torrey, as known as the architect, probably might go down in history as being one of these, well, I don't know, with these Vegas team coming up now, it could be a different story. But until this point, really, you know, started first off, he had to figure out how to get this team and build it. And that was a challenge because of what he had to work with. And things were different back in 72 than they are now. And basically what, Bill Torrey did was he started out by drafting Billy Smith and Ed Westfall in the expansion draft. Mm-hmm. He eventually ended up with Bobby Nystrom and Billy Harris in the amateur draft. And there were some significant players right there that I mentioned that were very significant in getting the Islanders into a place where they could, compete. And so, Bill Torrey was just this fantastic guy who had a good vision for hockey, seemed to understand the game very well, didn't have a lot to work with, but what he did have to work with, he was willing to, take a chance here and there on a couple of people he believed in. And again, he's the kind of guy that just built a dynasty from nowhere, and there aren't many dynasties these days in the NHL.
Yeah, and Bill Torrey, one thing he was so good at was drafting, and Garth Snow nowadays... He drafted Matt Barzal. Just imagine Matt Barzal times seven with Bill Torrey. Every pick with him. There were a few that weren't great, but he just hit on so many draft picks. You had...
Well...
Yeah, you could speak, because there were so many. I can't even name all of them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you go back to the list of general managers of the Islanders, there's only five of them, and Bill Torrey was the main guy. Until 1992, so he lasted quite a while on the team. He had Don Maloney, who came in and took over for about 3 or 4 years. And then, interestingly enough, Darcy Rieger, who was only an intern from December for maybe like 10 days because of ownership. And again, this has to go back with ownership. That's something we have to hit on because the people that are running the show and made the major decisions were, pulling the strings and telling what, can be done. So Darcy Rieger actually went on to the Buffalo Sabres about 2 years later and became the winningest general manager in Sabres history. He had Mike Milbury, Neil Smith for 40 days, and you have Garth Snow. So interestingly, general managers are quite instrumental.
Yeah, and a really instrumental, possibly monumental moment in Islanders history. They drafted Bobby Nystrom in the 1972 amateur draft. That was a huge pick. But one pick that people take for granted, Dennis Potvin, we know you're a huge fan of him. Montreal Canadiens general manager, Sam Pollock, wanted Dennis Potvin so bad, and he offered a boatload of picks. I think it was almost all their picks in that draft, prospects and cash. Cash in the day was huge. So this there was cash in that deal, too. And Al Arbour... wasn't here at the time, but Al Arbour later down the road was really involved in drafting, which I think is cool. We'll touch on that. But Bill Torrey just said, we're drafting this guy. And he, as you can explain, was a cornerstone of this franchise for years to come.
Oh, absolutely. And, again, you go back to the general manager, and they're obviously key in any organization, in any sport. And obviously we, move fast forward here to Garth Snow, But that's a conversation for another day. But, you know, listen, sometimes owners kind of hold the hands to the general managers and the coaches and things that can happen here. But now the Islanders are in good ownership. You know, I think we're really in a good place here. But, yeah, I mean, you know, going back then, you know, some good decisions were made. And then you've got a good coach coming into the team. And, my God, you got a great chemistry for a dynasty.
Yeah, and during what offseason was it? I think it was the 74 offseason. The Islanders convinced Al Arbor to come over from the St. Louis Blues. And I'm drawing a blank on the exact year. I think it was that year. But Al Arbor comes over, and this guy was one of the greatest coaches of all time. How did Al Arbor?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How did Al Arbor really help the Islanders take a bunch of young kids and make them into a Stanley Cup contender?
Well, for a couple different reasons. First off, before Al, you had Phil Goyette, and you had Earl Ingerfield, who were the two coaches before he came in. So for the first 2 years, the Islanders really didn't have a very good coach, or certainly a coach that wasn't successful, I should say, in all fairness. But Al Arbor was a very, very, very successful player on, I believe, St. Louis Blues. And he was a guy who, I believe, finished, I think he was about 18 seasons in a row. He had played as a player on teams that were successful.
Wow.
The problem was trying to sell Al Arbor on Long Island, because Al Arbor's perception, being a guy from somebody, say, out in the Midwest, thought Long Island was sort of Manhattan, and it had that lifestyle of the stars and, you know, Broadway and so forth. Yep. Bill Torrey did a great job, a very, very good job, of convincing him and selling him. And actually, he didn't have to do it. You could just... And it was Cold Spring Harbor. Cold Spring Harbor, a nice little nested town in Suffolk County in the North Shore. Beautiful place. I grew up there myself. And now bought a house on Donovan Drive and was happy where he lived. He wow. loved Long Island, which is the case of a lot of the Islander players at this time and over the years. So that was a big selling point for you know, Al to come over here. And you know, Al has just embraced the community. And obviously the success of the team has been amazing, and it's very historical, to say the least.
Yeah, so one problem that Al Arbor had, amazing coach, amazing regular season team. But when Al Arbor came over, something Islanders fans seem to forget, and I forgot about this before a few weeks ago, looking back at, you know, the history of the team. The Islanders weren't just 1980 to 1983. They were a good team for 5 years prior. And they were the modern-day Washington Capitals. They could not finish in the playoffs. They would have these comebacks. They would then fall out. They would blow games in overtime, a lot of tough overtime losses. How did the Islanders use this to motivate them when they finally became the dynasty team that they were?
Well, so, you know, Al went out and, or I should say, could be the collection of the general managers and the owners. They went and got Dennis Potvin. All right, and Dennis Potvin, in his first year, I believe, captured the Calder Trophy as the league's top rookie, which I believe Mr. Brazel is going to do now.
Yeah.
So that was a big piece of the puzzle. At the time, it didn't seem too much, but it really was. And that kind of, like, personnel on that team sort of, like, kind of added some sort of a spark where people on the team, the teammates, understood the intensity and the value of the team with a player like Dennis Potvin. And that was a good way for them to get going, you know. And again, it was really just the first 2 years. But in 84 and 85, the Islanders just sort of kind of kicked it up a little bit and obviously met those Rangers. And you know what happened in that first playoff series.
Yep. So in that first playoff series, they defeated the rival Rangers in a best of three. And J.P. Parise scored the goal seconds into overtime of Game 3. They were three-game series back in the day. And then you have the games. You have the Game 7s. They go down 3-0, the Islanders, and they come back and win 4 games. That's only been done by 4 teams in all of sports history, the Maple Leafs, the Red Sox, Flyers, Kings, and then additionally the Islanders. This was just great. To come back from 3-0 with such a young team in your first playoff year of the playoffs, how did that really, the guys in the locker room, how did they use that to motivate them?
Well, you know, Al Arbor, he had challenged his players most of the time. And he basically had say, if there's anybody here who doesn't want to feel they want to come back and beat these guys, get off the ice immediately. So he was a no-nonsense guy. And he literally said, if you don't want to be here, don't play. All right? I want people who want to be here. And I think there's a story, I don't know if it's actually published, but I believe it was Bobby Nystrom who might have, and this has nothing to do with his playoff goal back in the or Stanley Cup, but just as a player on the team in the locker room, in the personnel. And basically he got up and said, you know, I want to be the player. And then other people stood up and said, I want to be the player. Al Arbor had this motivation about him. He was a very inspiring, a very challenging, and a very motivating individual that got the most out of his players, and he used them to every bit that he could to get what he could, and that was really the result because of that, you know, that mentality.
Yeah, and the Islanders in 1975-1976 season got 101 points. That was the 100-point plateau. They broke that in their fourth year in the NHL. That was
amazing.
You don't see that besides Vegas, obviously, but you never saw that until, you know, that was just unprecedented. So the Islanders, they get another Calder winner. They get Brian Trottier. And this is just like you're starting to see these players that Bill Torrey drafted, Trottier, Potvin, and then Mike Bossy comes in later. They were the leaders of this team, but they were young. How were they able to lead this team at such a young age?
Well, I think it was the collection of the group. I believe it was, you know, sometimes the stars are all aligned. And like, I'm looking at the Vegas Knights this year, and I'm not going to compare the two by any means. That's not realistic. But I'm just looking at, you know, them just picking up the right players and the right personnel. Everything seems to be falling in place for them. And they're kind of still the dark horse, but my God, were they down to four teams? So they still have a chance. The Islanders did a really good job back then of picking up people on the team that were going to be players, and they bought into the system. They bought into Al Arbor. They bought into Bill Torrey. They built into Long Island. These guys liked where they were, and they realized they had a chance to possibly win a Stanley Cup one day. Mm-hmm. And so I think with that, you know, collaboration of people there, and the whole kind of mindset, it was the perfect storm for them to be successful, and they took advantage of it.
Yeah, and then the final pieces of the puzzle were starting to take place, and Mike Bossy was one of them. Al Arbor, and I spoke about this about 10 minutes ago, Al Arbor persuaded Bill Torrey to pick Mike Bossy. He was arguing between two players, Dwight Foster and Mike Bossy, and he wanted Bossy because Bossy could score and not check, and Foster could check and not score. So that was a really interesting thing. And then a famous quote from Al Arbor is, it's always easier to teach the scorer how to check than the checker how to score. So this pick really, really, it meant everything for the franchise. Bossy comes in and was one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. And how did his scoring prowess help the team? Just, they got points on the board, but they also started to get some confidence and really fight off these playoff demons that they were facing.
Well, you got to remember, Bossy was a perfect scorer. He could score almost any time. He had the ability. He really will go down in NHL history as probably one of the better, just gifted offensemen that can just put that puck in the net. He has that ability. Some people just have that gift, and he is the guy. There's plenty of others out there. There's still some right now in the NHL, but Bossy really was that guy back then who just had that gift. He had a gift where he could take that puck, figure out where the net was, find a spot, and get it in. And he was just really so amazing because his abilities were just, his accomplishments. And we could go on and on over certain days and dates that he scored goals. But if you look at most of his goals in big games, they were highlight goals. They were just weren't the crappy goals. They were, you know, here's a guy up in the air, you know, and had his stick up and boom, in the net. He was great. He will always go down as a legend, so to speak.
Yeah, so in 1979, the Islanders get eliminated from the playoffs. And this is a tough loss, and this is where things started to get bad in terms of the outside world. Journalists were starting to write about, newspapers were starting to write about, the Islanders can't win in the playoffs. And this was tough for them. So 1980 comes along. What do? They finally get the playoff demons out. And what Al Arbor did is he was like, the regular season is great, but we're going to focus on resting our players, getting in the mindset, and we don't care about 100-point seasons. We're going to make the playoffs, and then magic will happen. So how did that mindset from Arbor set the tone for the four cups?
Well, you know, perfectly said. How did it set the mindset? Mindset was really good within the locker room, and that was key because they had the respect of Al Arbor. They had the respect of the general manager. They believed in each other. That was one thing, you know, and they believed in each other. And fortunately for them, they had all those pieces. It was a generational time for hockey where you had that kind of mentality between all those players that were in the same room with the same idea, with the same belief, and they wanted the same outcome. They wanted to win. And, you know, it's hard in sports these days if you think about it. Like, so you go back to the NHL, and, you know, so we're going to be down to four teams soon. And you know what? One team's going to win, and one team only wins when the season starts. And now we've got, say, 31 teams with Vegas. That's, you know, tough odds. But the mentality and the belief in that room, again, it's positive thinking. People think positive. You have a belief. You feel you believe in yourself. You trust. You trust your teammates. You trust the room. You trust everything going on there. Your goalie makes a save at the right time. And that's what really propelled the Islanders, really. And again, Al Arbor challenged his players. He said to them, who wants to win? Who doesn't? If you don't want to be here, get out of here.
Exactly.
Bottom line.
Yep, really important. And the regular season pressure was off. And just like the Capitals, I spoke about it earlier on the show, the Capitals this year, the pressure, they didn't make the big trade. They didn't sign the big free agent. The pressure was a little lower, and that really helped them because they were in the mindset. And Al Arbor fostered that mindset in 1980.
Absolutely.
And one thing you saw was they were rested, they cared, and Butch Goring comes in. And this is something we should definitely touch on. Butch Goring comes
in. One of the best trades in history.
Yeah, one of the best trades in history because he comes in second-line center, and he doesn't help in the regular season. I mean, he really helps in the regular season, but he doesn't help get them to this high point total. They fall under the 100-point total for the first time in five seasons. But in the playoffs, he was a different beast. How did he help propel the team?
So Butch Goring had such great abilities. Number one, he had a little feistiness about him. He was a great penalty killer. I mean, one of the best in all time. He just seemed to have that ability as a hockey player. Had both sides of the ice, so to speak. So, for instance, he could score goals. He could defend but also score goals. He could play multiple positions. He was fast as lightning. He was one of the best trades the Islanders ever made. And he is just, you know, as we hear him in the broadcast booth, as good as he was then.
Yeah. And the first year, the playoffs were a roller coaster. And the Islanders blew a 4-2 lead in the third period. And Bob Nystrom, this is one of the greatest calls of all time, to Nelly to Nystrom. And Bob Nystrom gets the goal. And it was in overtime. Islanders in overtime seemed to go hand in hand back then. And how did Tonelli, I want to focus on him because John Tonelli, the casual fan, doesn't even know who this guy is because he wasn't a Bossy, he wasn't a Nystrom, he wasn't a Gillies, he wasn't a Potvin, he wasn't a Smith. Tonelli, though, was like the guy, the glue that sealed it all together. He wasn't the biggest name, but he was one of the best players on the ice. So how did Tonelli really get this team to where they needed to be along with Goring and all the other reinforcements?
John Tonelli will be one of those guys who never get quite the credit they deserve only because he just sort of took kind of a shadow to the whole situation around him. He was the hardest worker. He was the guy who went out and said, I'll dive to get the puck. I'll do whatever I have to do. I'll make that pass. I'll give 100% every game. I don't care. I'm out there. I want to win. I'm going to be the best player on the ice. And he may not have that ability as a goal scorer, say, or a passer, or any of that stuff, not to take anything away from him by any means. But John Tonelli was a fantastic player who gave his heart and soul, which every team needs. You always, you know, I mean, you can look at these teams we have now, and you can pick a few people out of the crowd. He was that guy who had that ability to spark that team because they looked at him as an example and said, there's John Tinelli. He's going diving in the corner. John Tinelli's hustling up the ice. He's way behind the guy, but doesn't care. Tinelli was really a unsung hero for Islanders over those years, especially during the dynasty years.
Yeah, so then the train starts rolling, and the Islanders start the dynasty. And one thing that the theme through the dynasty was the Islanders just absolutely, and we had Sean Grandy on the show. He was a Rangers fan. His mom was an Islanders fan. And he was telling me about how the Islanders just during this time absolutely dominated the Rangers. Like, it wasn't even funny. They won just every series, every game. And this started the 1940 chant that you hear at every game, and then the Dennis Potvin chant starts in New York. So how does the Islanders-Rangers rivalry start to brew because of the dynasty?
Well, so, again, this goes back to the start of the franchise coming in here in 1972. Rangers have been around since, I think, 24 or something like that. They were around for years. They were one of the original six teams. So here's one of the original six teams that have their place in the league, and then these other teams as franchise come in, and suddenly they're a part of the group. And as you know, if you're the original kind of team, you know any of these guys that come in here. And so what it was is the Islanders, they were the crosstown rivals. They were the small city kids who were out on the island, and they had no right being here. But they did, and they proved it. And it was really kind of amazing. As an Islander fan, it's probably one of the most exciting times, because Rangers were the Rangers. You know, they're New York, man. You know, we're Long Island, so obviously New York's a little bigger. And, well, I should say the city in Long Island's not quite as big in suburbia. But to see the Islanders come out and just have this dominance over those Rangers for all those years was the greatest thing. And I'll tell you, as a fan, I would try to get into games, but back then I couldn't. You know, price was a little high. It was late teens, early 20s. Mm-hmm. But I would go to a place called Charlie O's in Manhattan. My friends and I would take a train in, and we'd sit in this place called Charlie O's, like a sports bar. I don't know if they're around anymore. And we'd sit there, and we'd watch the Islanders Rangers right outside the garden. And we just felt like we knew they were always going to win, and they did.
Wow!
And when you left the garden, you interacted with all the other Ranger fans who were obviously very disappointed and stuff. And to see Islander fans, they were, oh, my God, you know, the small-town kids. So it was a lot of gratification back then, and truthfully, those were probably one of the better times with the Islander Rangers franchise, you know, rivalries that just brought a lot of good memories to my mind.
Yeah, and you don't see the Tri-State Area playoff series anymore, which really is unfortunate, because the Rangers and Islanders played almost every year back in the day.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, part of this, David, goes back to the format. And if you look at the history of hockey over the years, the format's changed. Actually, quite a few years ago, when the Islanders were such a good team and they won the division, they actually had a first-round bye. You know, so things have changed, and the format's changed, but I think it's for the better.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think the format this year fosters a lot of rivalry and intensity, the whole division thing. I just think there's been a lot of complaints with Nashville and Winnipeg going at each other, and back in the day, you saw a lot of interdivision matchups, but I just think when teams play each other more, there's more fights, there's more physicality. I just love the whole rivalry aspect of divisions, and the Islanders and Rangers exemplified this. They were one of the best rivalries in hockey at the time, which was really
absolutely
great.
Indeed, and they still always will be.
Yeah, definitely. One of the greatest rivalries, my favorite rivalry, and they won the Stanley Cup that year. That's their second Stanley Cup. And then the third year where the Islanders win the Cup, Mike Bossy just led the Storm. 147 points in an 80-game schedule. I mean, just take that in for a second. 147. That is almost 2 points per game. He just every night went out there and just dominated. And he led the team. They won 15 straight games, 15-game winning streak, 118 points. They were back to their regular season dominance, and the Islanders won the regular season title and the Stanley Cup title. John Tinelli again scores the game-tying goal and overtime winner against the Penguins. Just they defeat the Rangers again. And then they defeat the Nordiques. Just so many great stories this year. This was the year where the team gained its confidence. And I don't know if you could explain this. Nassau Coliseum, the home ice, just started to be like, this is our home, and we're going to win not just games here, we're going to win Stanley Cups here.
Oh, absolutely. That was Fort Neverlose. And Fort Neverluce was open for many, many years. Unfortunately, it didn't retain that title. it's a very difficult situation with the Islanders. And seriously, just to kind of elaborate a little bit, you know, we started off with, Bill Torrey and Roy Bowe as the owners and the general manager and so forth. A lot of things have changed since that time.
Yep.
And that's where a lot of people really have to kind of think about where we are now, because those were good days back then. They had the right people in place. They had the right formula, the right players. Everything seemed to be working for them. But, again, you know, ownership has a lot to do with it. And so there were some changes over the years after the dynasty, which really changed the organization in general. So up to the dynasty years, we were very good. We were very fortunate. We had a general manager. We had an owner. We had a great fan base. We were successful on the ice. But then, unfortunately, as we moved forward, in, say, the mid-'80s, things changed a little bit. You know, there was a change of ownership and, general manager change and a couple other things. So those are kind of key pieces to where we are now. I'm telling you, I'll hold and treasure those days back then because I lived them. I was there. They were such a big part of my life. It's given me inspiration to have this vibrant feel towards the Islanders and want to be so supportive.
Yeah, and elaborating on some of the struggles, in 1986, that's when things started to really take a turn. Bobby Nystrom retired due to a serious injury. Injuries yep. hurt this team. Bossy and Nystrom, injuries hit them. That was sad. And Clark Gillies, the Islanders left him unprotected in a waiver draft, is what it was called.
Yeah.
So they actually lost him for nothing. Al Arbor retires. Terry Simpson comes in. And
yes.
It was tough. So they tried hard, but the dynasty was kind of the peak of this franchise, and things have been going, I'd say, downhill ever since. But hopefully, just you got to stay positive. This team has the history. They have the roots. John Tavares has been a little more active on Twitter recently. He said it about Bill Torrey. This team has the roots of a fantastic and such a successful organization, and they just need to get back to that with personnel change, whether it's a change or just a change in mindset with starting to look for winning.
And you know what, David, just to chime in on this whole thing here. So you made a very good point there. I went back to the general managers earlier. They're very important, and again, we're all kind of caught in this realm of where we want the Islanders to be, where they've been, our general manager, but part of this whole thing goes back to the ownership. And again, this is something we have to touch on. We have some more time because the ownership really controls a lot of those decisions that are made about the people that are hired. And at one point, when the Islanders were in the late 80s and early 90s, they were in such financial problems that they could barely play their players. So there were a whole set of problems that kind of brought us to where we are now. But I would ultimately say that we are in probably the best hands we've ever been in a long time with two great owners. We have a new arena getting built. I'm positive about that. I know there's a lot of naysayers that hear some stuff. I was just at the public question forum the other day. Listening to David Brown, who's with the Sterling for the Islanders, and you know, I thought to myself, I listened to a lot of these guys come in there and a lot of these people, and they sit there. I said, well, what about the traffic in our backyards? Bottom line is, the Islanders are going to build a new arena. It's going to be a wonderful, beautiful place to go. It's going to be accessible for all, and ownership has a lot to do with that. So we're really in good hands right now. But so much to talk about between then and now, because honestly, ownership really had a big play in the Islander history.
Yeah, ownership is where everything starts from, and the whole Belmont thing. I know on our site we've been offering two different perspectives of that it'll get done and that it won't. And I know you commented on one of our articles because I just feel like as a fan base we've been so heartbroken that one of our writers Kyle has taken it to heart to look at these all the negatives and kind of take the opposite side, whereas another writer took the positive side. And there's a lot of doubts environmentally and the train station. And this fan base, they need this. John Tavares needs this. If John Tavares is going to stay, he's going to want this arena at Belmont Park. I hope for the future of the Islanders that this arena gets done, because ownership. It's in their hands. I just feel like they have too much power to let this not be done. I think that it just has to get done, I hope. But
yeah.
This is just
listen,
so
I'll tell
important.
You what, David. I'll put your mind to rest here. And, again, I'm just a positive fan, and really that's what I am. But I do go to a lot of these events, and I'm one of those guys that go to those places where they sit there and they talk for hours, and it's very boring, and you yawn before you leave and all. But you pick up a lot of information. And the bottom line is, and I've been to just about every one of these, question and answers, public forums and what have you. And I've sat and I've listened, I've absorbed, and pretty much what I've taken out of it is Valen's going to get this thing done. There's just a little resistance from the local folk. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen in any big building project that goes on in the world, whether it's locally here in Long Island or some other place across the country. That's just a part of, civilization. But this is going to get done. It's going to be a great situation. They're going to work out the train stuff. Allen's going to have a new home. John Tavares has everything he would need for the future with the good young players he has. So moving forward, I think you're going to ask that question. But, I'm still looking for the captain to sign, and I'm very positive.
Yeah, so in the future, on this show, I would love to have you back. We talked about the positive history of the Islanders. They they had two rough seasons to start out from 75 all the way until 84. They were one of the greatest teams in all of sports. They had the greatest dynasty in all of hockey and one of the greatest dynasties in all of sports, right behind maybe the Chicago Bulls, Boston Celtics, maybe UCLA Bruins in college basketball. I was debating with my math teacher today. And I was taking the side of the Islanders. He said UCLA. But we were debating. The Islanders have a history, and they need to not go back to winning four cups because that's impossible. I'll say it. Right. I think it's very difficult. The Penguins couldn't even do it, and they have Sidney Crosby and a really great team. But they just need to get back to their winning roots, and they need to get back to being a respected organization, which is I don't know if I could say that right now, and just they need to get this arena done. So the Islanders have this history, they have this roots, and I just hope it translates to the present and we really see something happen and the narrative of the New York Islanders in the modern day changes.
No doubt about it, David. And next time we're on, and I hope you have me, because I'd love to go through the history of the ownership here, because that's very, very instrumental.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
To everything that we even talk about now and in the past or in the future. The ownership has a big deal to do with the history of the Islanders, and as I've said before, and I will say again, they're in good hands with this ownership, and that's one of the first things that the Islanders have had before the dynasty years or during dynasty years they have not had, and that's been many years of vacant, class ownership. And ownership is key because ownership makes those major decisions about who's a general manager, and what kind of money we can spend and so forth. So, before you go to bed tonight, when you go on your pillow, just know the Islanders are in good hands with the ownership, and moving forward, we should be, in time, a good team. And again, you go back to these young players that they have, it's another story for another day. We have a lot of past to propel us into the future. And there are cycles in sports where teams are good for a while and then they're not and so forth. And that's exactly what the Islanders were. And when we have more time next time, I really do want to hit on the ownership, because that really is absolutely key to where, decisions were made about general managers and captains and so forth.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Ownership's important, and people aren't exactly the most biggest fans of John Ledecky and Scott Malkin right now, but just think of what they've done. They've done great things for Long Island and the city, and I'm really confident in the hands that in their hands, and I just hope things go better because this fan base deserves it.
Of course. And what was the other thing I wanted to say? Oh, a big shout out. I understand you're going to Hofstra. I'm very happy for you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Yeah.
That's a good place for you to be, and I think you're going to excel there, so I'm very glad for you.
Yeah, thank you. I just committed 2 weeks ago. Great radio station there.
Yeah.
Great proximity to the Islanders journalism program. I compare it with math. I'm so excited to head off to Hofstra and be an official resident of Long Island, which is crazy to think, but I'll be heading over
Amen.
There soon.
Amen. You'll be around those islands a lot, coming to a lot of games, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited for that. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always an honor and a pleasure to have you. You are one of the greatest people to talk to. I admire your positivity, and I look forward to speaking with you soon. So thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
All right. That was Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy. You heard him. Stay positive, guys. Things might be tough right now, but look back to the history of this team. Things will work themselves out. So that was Patrick Dowd. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll be back with him hopefully next month, and we will be back after a short commercial break to close up the show.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio, the voice of business. That was a fantastic interview. I learned so much. I hope you guys learned so much. Patrick Dowd is basically the Islanders encyclopedia. So that was so fun to talk to him about the history. We'll have him on again soon to talk about Islanders ownership, management, Garth Snow a little bit, and then John Tavares. So thank you so much for listening today. Check out Drive for Five, our website. We are talking about Thomas Greiss, the goaltender situation for next season, as well as cap issues coming up with Ryan Pulock, Jordan Eberle, and Anders Lee. A lot of stuff to read there. We also, next week, I'm really excited for the slate we have coming up. We had Mr. Dowd today, and then we have Mr. Stevenson, the Rangers' new beat writer. For those of you Islanders fans, we're going to get a new perspective of the Islanders' arch rival, the New York Rangers. We're going to be talking about them next week and their struggles. So if you like hearing about the Rangers' struggles, this is the episode for you. So the Rangers beat writer, he's done the gauntlet of he's done a lot of beats on the past, so excited for him. And then Brendan Burke should be. I have confirmation that he should be coming back on the show. I was sick last time I was supposed to interview with him, and that really hit me hard. I was so excited to talk to him, and I got sick. Really wish I could speak with him, but we're going to do it again. I'm really, really excited for that. And then we've got some surprise guests coming from all over the country. Dallas Stars, we're going to be talking about Vancouver Canucks, these beat writers that we're getting. So I'm not going to give up names there because they're still in the process, but we're going to be talking about hockey, not just the Islanders, destination hockey, all the NHL, world championships coming up, everything. So stay tuned to Destination Hockey. We have so much going on, and I'm really excited for the future of the show. If you want to hear past episodes, head over to http://www.hunterdonchamberradio.com/radioshows/destination hockey. So that's the link. You can head over there to listen to all our past episodes with Patrick Dowd, Sean Grandy, Shannon Hogan, all the episodes. If you missed it, head back over there to listen to it. This episode will be available there as well. So guys, thank you so much for listening today. It was an honor to speak to Mr. Dowd again, and we will be back next week with Mr. Stevenson of Newsday. So thank you so much for listening.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.